I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The acclaimed writer Shani Mutter joins me now. She has just published her latest novel, her sixth, Moving Forward Sideways Like a Crab. I've seen a couple of reviews already, and they're quite good. The book is described as a triumphant return about identity, the people around you that make up one's family, and coming to terms with the past. In the story, Jonathan's mother, Sid, disappears from his life when he's 9 years old. He reconnects with his lost parent, Sydney, now a man living in Trinidad. I'll get Ms. Mutu to tell us about her book and the discoveries Jonathan makes and the meaning that he derives from the life he's trying to understand. Shani Mutu's four previous novels, Out on Main Street, Sirius Blooms at Night, He Drowned, She in the Sea, and Valmiki's Daughter, have all been critical successes, nominated for various prizes. She's also written a book of poetry, The Predicament of Ore. This new book is published by Doubleday. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Shani Mutu. Ms. Mutu, good morning.
Hello, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
And thank you very much.
We were talking before we started that you'd lived in Vancouver for a while?
Yes.
Yeah, and you were born in Ireland, you grew up in Trinidad, you lived in Vancouver for, you said, 20 years, is that correct?
Vancouver is the place I've lived the longest.
Oh, I see. Okay. Is that where you feel most at home?
I wouldn't say so. It's funny, I love Vancouver, but I always love Vancouver almost as if I were a tourist. It was always new every day. It was a beautiful place of discovery every day. But I never felt that that I was from Vancouver. I don't know where I feel like I'm from. But, you know, you can probably see in my books I'm very attached to Trinidad, even though I was there for only the first 19 years of my life.
Now, what part of Vancouver did you live in?
A few places. I was in the West End for a bit. When I first arrived, actually, I lived in New West.
Uh-huh.
And then I lived in the West End for a long time, and then at 12th and Granville.
I see.
And then most lately just near the PNE.
Do you find when people talk about living in Vancouver, wherever they live, that's the best place to live? If you talk to people in Yale Town, they say that's the best neighborhood. People, they say in Marpole, think that's, you know, the best place to live. I mean, did you find that in your time here? Because I think that of us as Vancouverites.
Well, I love Vancouver so much, and while I was living in Vancouver, I was going back and forth between New York and Vancouver. There was a five-year period when mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time in New York. And the only way I can answer your question is to say that now, moving away from both places, I miss the two of them practically daily.
And, really?
You know, the unsolicited images come to my mind, and I have this sort of weakening body feeling that I need to be in one of those two places. I don't have that about anywhere else.
Huh.
I have visited a lot of places.
Yeah.
And lived in a few places, quite a few places, but these are the two places that I long for.
Yeah. Now, you said you lived in Trinidad for 19 years. For a lot of people, your books are perhaps the only experience they have with the country, with the people. Is there something that you want people to come away with when they read your books, especially this latest one, to think about, say, Trinidad?
You know, that is a question that the answer to that question comes at the end of the writing of the book, because when I write it, I'm definitely not speaking to anyone in particular, not trying to tell any particular story or wanting anything from a reader. I'm so wrapped up in trying to follow a character or a landscape that in language, and then eventually trying to figure out, why am I so drawn to this character? Why am I so drawn to this landscape? What's happening here? By the end of it, I have to look at the whole project and say, okay, what am I trying to say here? And that is when a reader comes in. And so at the end of the book, I don't know if I'm really trying to encourage readers to know Trinidad or anything like that, or Trinidadians or other people to know about Toronto. I think the characters are probably, the story is probably more of what I'm interested in.
Yeah, but they
at
do
this
say.
Point.
Yeah, but they do say in some of the reviews that I've read of this book, as well as previous ones, that your depiction, your evocation of Trinidad, it's quite vivid.
Yes, I know. I've been noticing that. I noticed that a lot of attention is being paid to it, and I'm wondering if that is because people know Trinidad and they're saying, "Ah, yes, you got it," or if there's something that is perhaps you know, my writing, hopefully, is making them interested in the place.
Exactly,
that's
a
flattery, but it's certainly not an agenda.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the characters in this book. We'll begin, I guess, with Jonathan. Where was he born?
Jonathan was born in Toronto. His mother is a white English woman, and she just simply had him on her own. But she hooks up with this Trinidadian woman before Jonathan is actually born, and these two women bring Jonathan up as his mothers, as his parents.
Mm-hmm.
Until he's about 10 years old,
and then so the Jonathan's mother, the white English woman, that's India,
yes,
and then the Trinidadian woman is Sid,
yes.
What's the relationship between India and Jonathan as he grows up?
Well, India is a writer, and she's a fairly successful writer, and she is far more interested in her career and success and so on than she is in being a parent to Jonathan, and quite delighted that there's someone else who could take on that parenting role for her. She's not necessarily thrilled that that Jonathan is so close, but it's convenient that he's so close to Sidani. Now, one of the things that I enjoyed playing with is Jonathan is a straight white man, but because he's so close to Sidani, to this Trinidadian woman, there's a way that he is bicultural, and the longing that when Sid, as her name has been shortened to, when she leaves the family 10 years into the relationship, when Jonathan is, he's just over 9 years old. When she leaves, it's a huge rupture in Jonathan's life. And Jonathan spends a great deal of time looking for her. He can't get on with his life because this major parent figure has disappeared. And he goes looking for Jonathan, for Sidani.
And eventually, he finds her. Or finds him.
He finds the parent that was missing, but this parent has transgendered and is now a man. And it's a little bit difficult for Jonathan because, okay, so the search has come to an end in a kind of way. Looking for this person, this parent, who was a receptacle of everything that he was when he was a child. And so he still wants that. And that information is still there in the human that's his parent. But this is in a form that he's struggling to accept.
The relationship between now Sidney and Jonathan, he struggles with it. Does that include acceptance, say, of what Sidney's become?
Well, by the end, yes. By the end, he realizes that the love that they had when he was a boy, and when Sidney was a mother figure to him, that love exists. It remains, and he ends up really taking very, very good care of Sidney before Sidney dies.
Now, I guess part of the book is we find out why Sid leaves, right?
Yes.
What does this relationship fascinates me between between Jonathan and Sydney, and why he wants to look for her.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think's missing in his life? Do you think? I mean, is there something that other than say finding a missing person?
Well, it's a missing parent. It's like the person who was like his mother, and I think something that I was exploring is masculinity. Masculinity as it applies to a man who's born a man and to women and to women who transition into the form of a man, right?
Yeah.
Now, one of the things about Jonathan that I wanted to try to explore, as I said, Jonathan is a straight white man, and I think that straight white men are not... One of the problems with masculinity is that they're not supposed to have, deep feelings of loss, and they're not supposed to act out and to be affected by things that happen to them when they're children. They're supposed to, get on with it, be tough and be stronger than that. There's a refrain in the book, Jonathan remembers Sydney telling him, "But what do you feel, Jonathan? What do you feel?" And Jonathan's birth mother has no time for that sort of nonsense. She wants him to stop all this nonsense and be strong. And my sense as me, the writer, is that that's one of the problems with the world, is that here's a whole, very powerful, supposedly very powerful group of people who are not supposed to be weak and or to show weakness, or having feelings is being called being weak, and that sort of thing. So I wanted to explore through him what could happen in a situation like this, if one was allowed to be exactly as one might really be.
Yeah, and so you're fascinated enough to look at that and write a book around it. What have you come in terms of, how does that change one's life? How does it change Jonathan's life in particular? Feeling what he's supposed to feel or expressing what he's supposed to feel?
Well, I think that I also use him in a way to try to talk about what it might be like to be a person like Sydney or a person like Sadani,
uh-huh,
coming from the Caribbean into a place like Toronto. And I wanted Jonathan to become a kinder, more empathetic character. I wanted him to be a receptacle for Sydney's life, all the things that have gone on with Sydney. And I think that it was the journey for Jonathan is, in fact, to become a kinder person, a more open person.
Why do you think we're not like that then, as people?
Well, it's a good question. I don't have an answer for why we're like that, but I do know that I see the way men are supposed to be in the world, tough, and if they're not, they're called fags. And I also know a lot of young straight men who have been brought up by women who've been who are feminists, by men who are feminists, and I see what those men are like. They are kinder, and they create an environment that is a happier environment for the children around them and the women around them and so on. And so I just think, the vestiges of that harsher kind of masculinity I think that it would be nice if it were broken down more and more.
Yeah, and so you do have hope for the future, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm 32, and I do see with younger people a more empathetic, more sensitive, group of young people. I mean, I talk to older people as well who think that who fit that sort of straight male, stereotype, if you will, and who think that it's a weakening of society, perhaps. But I don't see it that way. I think you just look at the news and the sort of the stories that we're seeing. I mean, there is a change coming about.
Yes.
As slow though it may be, but I think it'll be probably a fairly different place 20 years from now, or a different culture, say.
It's really interesting for me to hear you say that, that you yourself hear what it is that I'm saying. So.
Yeah. Did you always want to write growing up?
I did. I wanted to write when I was very young, and then I realized that some of the things that I was interested in would get me in trouble if I said them out loud. So I started making pictures that were easier to pretend that a picture is something different than what you know will upset people around you. I became a visual artist, and then eventually was able to start writing.
And do you find that the stuff that you're writing now would have gotten people upset, say, 20 years ago?
It does now, even.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But getting a book together like this and getting people to read it, I'm sure upsetting a few people. I mean, it's worth it, isn't it?
Well, the thing is about this book, I was really surprised. A few reviews have come out now, and the reviews have been really quite positive so far, touch wood. But I was really, really surprised that people are paying attention not just to some of the situations in the book that have traditionally gotten people very very nervous and so on, like the transgendering or the lesbian stuff and so on.
Uh-huh.
But there's a lot of attention being paid to the larger story, and I think that speaks to the way things have changed in society, and also to a sophistication on the part of readers. That's really, really, really quite something. I always have more faith in readers than I think.
Than critics?
Sorry?
Than critics?
Or than, publishers. But I think at one time, there's more work being published like this now, but by mainstream presses. But at one time, I think they were nervous, Oh, you can't, that's not going to sell, or this. But I think readers are pretty sophisticated people.
Now, your publisher described this book as a triumphant return.
My publisher?
Yeah, of the literature that I read, they described this book as a triumphant return. So that begs the question: What have you been doing since the last book? And I'm curious to know what the process is in terms of. I mean, how many years has it been since the last book? And have you been working on this the whole time, or?
Well, it takes about a year for a book to come out, right?
Uh-huh.
So, and I had begun it right immediately after the last one, which came out in 2008. So it was about a five-year process. And, it can take that length of time to... it's always fascinating, in an interview, if you ask me what the book is about, I can tell you the story in 2 minutes. But the pleasure of a book is not simply that straight story.
Yeah.
It's all the scene setting, it's the nuances, the complications, the pleasure of a word, of two words next to each other. And I think that really takes time. I mean, this book is written from several points of view. And there's a lot of contradicting information from one person to the next, There are different ways that a story is told. And each one, each way, even though it's sometimes it's the same story being told, each way has to be for a reader to read the same thing again and again. Each time they read it, they have to be seduced into reading it and reading on. And that's the craft takes a long time. And it's what I love. You know, I love, and in this book I really got to explore that. And it took a long time to write, is how we tell stories.
And do you find that, I mean, there must be moments where it is maddening. Do you have a lot of those as well?
When it's what? I'm sorry?
When it's maddening, when it's frustrating.
God. Well, yeah. This is the most difficult book I've written. And it is because they are so, I'm trying to write how different people tell the same story, how they hear the other person telling the story, what people don't see when they're telling a story, and how they read what has been written privately by someone, you know. So, and what you do with all of that information in the end. So Jonathan takes on all that he has heard and all that he has read and tries to write a memoir. But, you know, as Sydney tells him, you're going to make your own. You're going to interpret everything that you hear. You're going to interpret it, and your interpretation is part of the story. You're not going to be able to tell this story without your interpretation, and that, too, is part of the story.
And I guess,
it was difficult. It was extremely difficult to hold all of that and to juggle it. But I have a fantastic editor who's, this is my third book with her, and she really understands what I'm trying to do. She really, really understands my project, not just the storytelling that I want to do, but how, and my interest in craft and so on. So she indulges me.
So the title of the book is Moving Forward Sideways Like a Crab. Where does that come from?
Well, as I just told you, the whole story moves forward. It does move forward, but sideways a great deal.
And so you feel that way when you're writing as well?
You know, the title, I got the title quite early in the novel, and it was almost a permission itself, actually, to write on and to digress and to not rein myself in too much. And I'm hoping that the title will be an indication to the reader to read sideways also.
When I saw the title, it made me think that, it's a saying from, 500 years ago or something like that, you know?
That it was a saying?
There's some phrase from, you know, it's something cultural or something like that, you know?
No. But the crab thing, I mean, you know, I really do think about crabs, the way they make their way down to the sea from their, from the sand, you know, from high up on the sand. And God, if they'd only go a straight line, they'd get there so much faster. But they do get there, but sideways.
Yeah, well, that's life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shani, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today. I can't wait to finish this book, and congratulations on it. Good luck with it.
Well, thank you so much.
The book is called Moving Forward Sideways Like a Crab. It's published by Doubleday. Its author, Shani Mutu, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.